Students are finding it nearly impossible to pay for a four-year university education on their own. Scholarships and minimum wage jobs are simply not enough. Instead, students take out thousands of dollars out in loans, quickly falling into debt. According to government data published by the Wall Street Journal, the average 2015 graduate left with $30,867 in debt. What is your plan to make college more affordable?
Thank you, Nikechi. Well, first of all, I'm the first in my family to have gone to a four-year university. I attended UCSB. I worked my way through college. I took out a number of loans. So I know firsthand what it's like to take on loans. I also have a daughter who just finished her bachelor's and master's as well. And again, I certainly am very aware and in tune with the student debt challenge that many, many students face attending a four-year university or higher education, period. What we need to do is make sure that those that have taken on debt have an opportunity to refinance their debt, like many can refinance their home mortgages. It's a real shame that you can't refinance your student debt, but you could refinance your mortgage. Secondly, I think it's really important that we do not allow the banks to continue to profit off the backs of students who take out loans to further their higher education. We need to make sure that the loan of the interest rates that banks, institutions are giving these loans at are lowered, and that banks are not allowed to, prosper on the back of students. I think that's a real travesty, and I hope to be able to champion those issues in Congress.
Do you support a path to citizenship for the undocumented? And if not, what should be done with the millions of undocumented residents, including families and children, that live in this country?
I absolutely support a path to citizenship, and I support comprehensive immigration reform. I believe in the bipartisan bill that the United States Senate reached, but that the House Republican leadership was not able to move forward. I certainly believe in allowing people to come out of the shadows and to continue contributing to our economy and our society, and to not have to live in fear of their families being separated and being deported. You know, I'm an immigrant myself. I came to this country when I was 5 years old. But back then, the immigration system worked, and there was a process. And people who wanted to come to this country, at least my family, went through that process. But over the years, that process has shamefully become more and more broken. And so I think today we are dealing with over 11 million individuals that are undocumented. And I support comprehensive immigration reform, a path to citizenship. I also support the president's executive order that he made for DACA and DAPA. And I am also in favor of the DREAM Act.
What role should the United States have in the Syrian refugee crisis? How many refugees should we be committing to take in a year, if any?
Well, I think the United States needs to work with all our allies and all the Middle Eastern countries and Europe to make sure that everybody is playing a role in addressing this very important humanitarian crisis. The United States certainly has a role in addressing this issue as well. By golly, we're the United States. We always, I think, have tried to model the way in being part of solutions to address humanitarian issues in our world. And I think certainly we need to make sure that there's a good vetting process because some people have this fear that some of those individuals may want to bring harm to our country. But overwhelmingly, this is a humanitarian crisis. And we, the United States, have a role of stepping up to make sure that we are doing our part to alleviate and address this humanitarian crisis.
Mass shootings are no strangers to United States citizens. Here in Santa Barbara, gun violence has also affected us. In 2014, UC Santa Barbara lost 6 students to a mass murder, 3 of whom died from gun violence. Does the United States have a gun violence problem? How do we prevent mass shootings from happening?
We do have a public health epidemic when it comes to gun violence in our country. And we need to make sure that we are addressing this very important issue by making sure that legislation moves forward that requires universal background checks. We also need to make sure that we are precluding ammunition, high-capacity ammunition clips from being sold. And we also need to ban assault rifles from our communities throughout our country. Look, I served in the United States Marine Corps. I've shot automatic weapons, semi-automatic weapons. I know the destruction that they do. And certainly those weapons do not belong on our streets. I believe in a strong Second Amendment. But within the Second Amendment, there is room for sensible gun laws. And I think we need to do everything possible to ensure that we move those types of important issues of legislation, pieces of legislation, forward.
Pew Research Center finds that out of 41 industrialized countries, the United States remains the only nation where there exists no paid family leave mandate. What is your plan to address family leave?
Well, I plan on supporting legislation, initiating when at all possible, legislation that promotes good family leave in our country. It is a real shame that most industrialized nations have paid family leave. Parents shouldn't have to pick between their employment and their children's care. I believe this is something that we have been behind the curve for many years, and it's important that we step up and once and for all move family leave forward in a way that really helps working middle class families get ahead.
In 2014, Congress passed H.R. 1447, Death in Custody Reporting Act of 2013, to address police brutality. This bill mandates that police departments across the nation report to the federal government the information of anyone who dies while being arrested, detained, or en route to incarceration. What should be done to address high-tension police situations, and would you support another bill like this if it came through the House of Representatives?
Well, I think we have a trend that's emerged of a breach of trust between our law enforcement, some of our law enforcement agencies, and a number of ethnic minority communities throughout our country. We certainly need to look at ways to bridge that breach. And whether it's legislation like the one that you've outlined as one step, but I think as important, we need to make sure that Congress is providing the necessary funding for training to our law enforcement personnel so that they could better address, for instance, situations that emerge from mentally challenged individuals and to help them better address those instances. We also need to address inherent biases and help provide the type of training and awareness so and education so that we can create better relations between police departments and minority communities who have felt that in a number of instances civil rights have been violated. By the same token, I think it's also important to recognize that, you know, our law enforcement officials also have a very challenging job. And we need to make sure that when there is also violence amongst our police law enforcement officials, as we've seen in Dallas and Louisiana, that we also speak out against those issues. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done to bridge this breach that has occurred between law enforcement agencies and mostly minority communities throughout our country.
What should be done to prevent sexual assault, especially on college campuses?
Well, you know, I have a daughter that is now 31, and she obviously attended a number of campuses to get her education. And I would never have wanted her, and do not ever want any young women to experience such terrible crimes against them. And I think what we need to do is make sure that we are holding administrations accountable to ensure that they are prosecuting perpetrators quickly and aggressively. So they root out this type of culture in colleges, and to provide a no-tolerance policy. I think we need to send really strong messages and to college campuses that assaults against women will not be tolerated, and perpetrators will be prosecuted aggressively and will be expelled from colleges. So I think it's important that we do everything possible as well to provide for education and training. So those are some of the things that I think need to be done.
Should drug addiction be treated as an illness, or should we continue to use a tough-on-crime, war-on-drugs policy that punishes users with jail time? What's your plan for addressing drug addiction in the United States?
Well, you know, in my background, I have worked on drug and alcohol treatment, prevention, and intervention issues. Certainly, I think that addiction is a disease, and we need to recognize it as such. And we need to make sure that we are doing everything possible to bring about appropriate resources to provide for treatment, intervention, and interdiction and prevention. But I also think that there are instances where individuals, irrespective of whether they are on drugs or not, if crimes are committed, there needs to be an adjudication and obviously proper penalty for the crimes that are committed. But I think we do need to recognize that addiction is a disease, and we need to do everything possible to help as many people as possible go into recovery, to live healthy lives, to be productive in their own lives and in our society. So I do recognize addiction as a disease.
How do we close the wage gap between white men and women and minorities? One idea comes from three current representatives, Eleanor Norton from D.C., Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut, and Gerald Nader, who have introduced the Pay Equity for All Act, which prevents employers from asking new hirees about their salary history. The bill remains in limbo until Congress returns from recess. Do you think this bill and others like it solves the gender and racial wage inequality? And if not, what does?
Certainly that's an important bill to address this very important issue. But I think it's men in general that overall make more money than women. We haven't achieved equal pay for equal work as of to date, and we need to do everything possible to address that disparity that exists. It's de facto discrimination, and far too long women have not been paid what men are paid. As a matter of fact, 78 cents on the dollar is what women receive in terms of compensation over their male counterparts. And if you're a African-American or Latina woman, it's even worse. So we certainly need to make sure that legislation like that, like the Paycheck Fairness Act, that equal pay for equal work legislation is promulgated in a way that once and for all, we are providing the type of teeth and the type of framework that is needed to ensure that this practice stops soon or immediately.
Given that the United States has agreed to the climate change accord created in Paris last winter, how do we transition to cleaner energy and more green business practices without hurting the economy?
Well, I think that's been one of the, I think, falsehoods that people think, is that you can't do both. You can't move to create a healthier environment and at the same time have a healthy economy. I think you could do both. California is living proof of that. I believe that the United States, like California, needs to make sure that we outline specific goals for bringing about renewable energy in our country. Renewable energy such as solar, wind, wave, and outline specific goals and incentivize industries and technology so that we could have more abundance of these renewable energy sources brought forward. Today, we don't have a clear energy policy that outlines the types of investments, the types of goals we want to have relating to renewable energy sectors. I think in doing so, not only do you address our climate change and greenhouse gas emissions, but you also create, you move towards a renewable energy, clean energy economy, and you create good, well-paying jobs. I think that's the type of approach we need to take to bring about and transition ourselves from a fossil fuel economy to a renewable energy economy.
Okay, and this is your time to give a closing statement.
Thank you very much, Nakechi. You know, I immigrated to this country when I was 5 years old. My father was a miner. Then he moved us to Oxnard from Arizona, where he worked as a farm worker. I worked with my parents in the fields, my father, in the summers to try to make ends meet. I was lucky that despite the economically challenges that my family faced, I was able to come here to UCSB for my education. I'm the first in my family to graduate from a four-year university. I believe that I'm running for Congress to make sure that working middle-class families here on the Central Coast, students here at UCSB, for example, have the same opportunities I had to get ahead, to get a good education, to get a good job. And I want to make sure that I can do that in Congress for the Central Coast and for our Central Coast values. In this election, there's a real contrast between me and my opponent. I'm a pro-choice candidate. My opponent is not. I believe in raising the minimum wage to help working middle-class families pull themselves out of poverty. My opponent does not believe in that. I'm against offshore oil development and fracking. My opponent is for it. I also believe in passing sensible gun laws that could address this needless violence that we also had here on our own campus, UCSB. I think there's a real clear contrast. I'm proud to have the endorsement of Congresswoman Lois Capps, the Sierra Club, Planned Parenthood, the Santa Barbara Independent, the Ventura County Star, and the San Luis Obispo Tribune. I hope to earn your vote comes November 8th. To serve as your next representative in Congress. And Nakechi, I'm extremely proud to have just received the endorsement from President Barack Obama. I think that reaffirms my values, which are aligned with our president and all the great things our president has done for our country and what I hope to be able to do in representing the Central Coast